Tuesday, August 20th, we spoke to columnist Daniel Greenfield. He had some pointed things to say about the current BDS controversy with members of Congress and Israel. Sports gambling expert James Murphy joined us from CasinoInsider.com. He gave us his opinion on what Connecticut should do and should not do once sports gambling eventually gets here, maybe. But we started off the show with some news about some elderly folks in Fairfield who still want to have some fun.
If it's happening in Bridgeport, the Valley, or Fairfield County, Paul is talking about it. Connecticut Today, WICC 600.
Yeah, as we span the area here, Bridgeport, Fairfield County, to let you know what's going on. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Well, you know, these are just these little spice of life stories. Now, we started the show yesterday with the story of a woman, I believe, in Norwalk, who decided that under the effect of alcohol, there's a shocker, that not only was it okay to prance around the beach there topless, she flashed a little pressed ham down low at some of the people complaining, and she was taken into custody, and her name and picture were all over the place. So I kind of had a good laugh at this one, at that one, as I do at this one. This one, I don't know what's happening in Lower Fairfield County here. Must be something in the water, maybe. I don't know. You tell me. This version got out of the Connecticut Post, but it's all over. It's on a bunch of websites. It's all over the place. Must be fun being a cop in Fairfield. Police arresting six people last week after getting reports of lewd and sexual activity in the Grace Richardson open space area at the intersection of Congress Street and Morehouse Highway. Now, for you folks living in Fairfield, I do not reside in Fairfield. I've been through it several times, travel there often, but I'm not familiar with the intersection of Congress Street and Morehouse Highway. There was an open space there where all this was apparently going on. So if you're in the area there, you may want to be careful, keep the little kids from, "What's that, Mommy?" You know. Well, according to police, the department got several complaints of the inappropriate behavior during the week of August 12th. The parcel's an 87-acre piece of land that was part of a major acquisition from the town in 1996. Well, what happened? They got these phone calls, and the Fairfield Police Department quickly dispatched its quality of life units. I didn't know they had one of those, but apparently they do. And they were assigned to investigate all these reports of lewd behavior. Now, on Friday, last Friday, officers and detectives from both the Special Services Unit and the Quality of Life Unit conducted surveillance. So I guess that means they, you know, were watching. If you're going to surveil something, you gotta watch, right? They conducted a surveillance in and around the open area. Several violations were observed. They made several arrests. The charges, public indecency, breach of peace, generally, they were all released on a promise to appear in court. Now, here is the, I don't find a need to give the names here. That, listen, these people, whatever. But I did find a couple things interesting here. And I'm not trying to assume what was happening here, but there were five guys and one woman arrested. Now, if we're going to play ratios here, you can go ahead and figure whatever. I don't know who was with what was going on, but the arrestees here, let me see, one, two, that's a guy, three is a guy, four is a guy. So five guys and one woman. Ages of the men. This is another kind of intriguing thing about this case. The ages of the men arrested, 67, 62, 75, 62, and ladies and gentlemen, to top it all off, 82. 82 was the oldest arrestee among the guys. The oldest arrestee, the actual oldest arrestee was the woman who was arrested. Now, just to double check here, yeah, there's only one woman out of the six names. She, ladies and gentlemen, was 85 years old. All right, there you go. Apparently, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
85. Well, look, listen, I don't sit here and judge whatever people, whatever free, and maybe it was in celebration of Woodstock. Could that have been it? Could have been. 85, huh? So just when I think I'm at home and I say, you know what, it's over. The engine's dead. You know what I'm saying? What's the use? What's the use? Thank you, Aaron. As my erstwhile producer whispers in my headphone, there's still hope. I guess there is. Wow. Well, he needs a little wah-wah guitar. 67, 62, that's not old. 75, 62, 82, and 85. Oh, yeah. Get that freak on there. There you go. You know? Out in the fresh air of nature, you're not encumbered by, you know, four walls and a ceiling. You're not encumbered by all the entrapments of, you want to get back to the cavemen.
Oh, yeah.
You want to just, you know, how did the settlers do? How did, what was up? They want to go, maybe you had a few people out there that wanted to just go all Fred and Wilma. You like that one, Aaron, huh? Fred and Wilma. Little Fred and Wilma and Barney and Betty going on there. Yeah, you don't know. Fred and Barney. Wilma and Betty. Hey, I'm just, listen, maybe it's just a little love of nature. Who knows? So there you go. So once again, and if you folks in Fairfield know this area, if you want to, if you'd like to comment on this, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. This happened in the open space area. A lot of open space there, apparently. Mm-hmm. 87 acres, Congress Street and Morehouse Highway. Now, they, again, you know what? I would love to have been a fly on the wall or a fly on the branch, not necessarily to see what was going on with these people, but can you imagine the Fairfield cops who had to kind of go there and who had to conduct surveillance, right? Right? Aaron's right. Aaron just said in my headset, at what point do they come and say, whoa, that's it, people. Fairfield PD, put your hands up or whatever, right? I mean, you got to move in to make the arrest, don't you? You know, let me see your hands. Don't touch anything. All right, driving and weather together on the sixes. Man, whoever invented the wah-wah pedal for that Fender Stratocaster, that Telecaster, it's all you need, baby. Driving and weather together on the sixes. 226, it's a Tuesday, Connecticut Today on WICC.
To Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
And we thank you. Thank you so much on this National Radio Day. We appreciate you doing that. Hour number three of our four-hour get-together right here on the WICC 600 on the air, online at WICC600.com. Joining us right now is a gentleman who we've had on the show before. We welcome him back. We welcome a journalist, Daniel Greenfield. He's a Shulman Journalism Fellow at the Freedom Center, and also you see his appearances on Fox News, several other outlets. He also writes for Front Page Magazine. And once again, Daniel, welcome back here to WICC in Bridgeport. We appreciate it. How are you today?
I'm good. It's a pleasure to be on again. Thank you.
And I wanted to have you on because we are awash, Daniel, in this continued coverage
of the BDS movement, in particular, the two members of the American House, Ilhan Omar from Minnesota and Rashida Tlaib from Michigan, who, you know, every other pronouncement from them, Daniel, seems to be critical of Israel. And I wanted you to weigh in on this. They, both of them, in particular, Congresswoman Tlaib, continues to throw some sort of some sort of tantrum here, because the Israeli government said, well, you can come visit your grandmother if you'd like, but you are not allowed to have political activities on this whole thing. What's your whole take on them and as it connects to and revolves around the BDS movement here?
I mean, the BDS movement is basically dedicated to destroying Israel. They wanted to enter Israel to stage provocations, to get themselves arrested, to create some sort of scandal. Israel decided that it was just better not to let them do that. So it's just they're getting their 15 minutes now. They can throw a tantrum for another few days or so, and then it peters out, whereas if they'd actually gotten into the country and gotten themselves arrested, it would have lasted for weeks. So Israel basically decided it was better to have them outside than have them inside. And they're quite frustrated, understandably, because what they want most of all is publicity. They want attention. They want to play the victim.
Now, Ed, if you can, Daniel, can you just explain to some of our listeners here who might not understand the origins of the BDS movement, what that actually means and where it stands right now, if you could?
So if you originally go back... Back when Israel actually declared independence, a number of the major Arab countries announced that they were going to have a boycott in which nobody could actually buy any products or do any business with the Jewish state until it was ultimately destroyed. The BDS movement, which that's what it calls itself, stands for Boycott, Divest, Sanction. It's a modern attempt to revive it. It was created by a gentleman from Qatar who actually spent about 25 years living in Israel and studying in Israel, but keeps insisting that Israel should be boycotted, which is a bit of a paradox. He's been pretty clear. His name is Omar Barghouti. He's been pretty clear about the fact that he supports terrorism. He supports violence against Israel. His particular tactic, though, was to call for boycotts of Israel. That doesn't just mean not buying Israeli products. It means, for example, not allowing Israeli academics or Israeli movies or Israeli music. Not allowing, for example, American musicians. Every time an American musician goes to Israel to do a concert, there are immediately protests and petitions urging them not to go. So it's basically the idea is cutting off Israel from the rest of the world in order to create pressure that would eventually destroy it.
Daniel Greenfield is the guest. He's a Shulman Journalism Fellow at the Freedom Center, writes for a number of publications, appears on a number of outlets. Your latest piece, Daniel, talk a little about that, what American Jews don't understand about BDS. What are you saying in that piece?
The basic idea is that many ways people think that the real objective is the boycott, and the boycott obviously is an objective, but the real objective is to conduct this kind of harassment, to get attention, to stage publicity stunts. That's exactly what we're seeing from Omar and Tlaib. We're seeing this effort to make Israel controversial, to turn the people who are attacking Israel into the victims by, again, having these confrontations, having this kind of harassment, because what they want most of all is publicity. They want most of all is to maintain this as a story that's going to be in front of the public all the time. And they've succeeded in that to the extent that attention is paid to them.
You know, Daniel, they're trying, both of these members of Congress and some others, they're trying to issue the image that Israel is hostile to members of Congress, members of the House. Yet, a lot of people don't know, Daniel, that recently there was a visit of, what, 72 House members to Israel? What, 41 Democrats and 31 Republicans, which seemed to go off without a hitch, correct?
Exactly. So there's the idea that Israel doesn't let members of Congress in is ridiculous. It doesn't let in certain political extremists, and the United States also doesn't let in certain political extremists. Most countries will say, your views are too horrible. You're actually calling for the destruction of our country. So, yes, we don't actually want you coming to our country. The United States does the same thing to come here. For example, you have to certify that you're not a member of the Nazi Party, you're not a member of the Communist Party, so on and so forth. So This is just a common sense thing that every country does. On the other hand, when you're actually bigots, and Omar and Tlaib just actually retweeted a cartoon from somebody who had participated in Iran's Holocaust denial cartoon contest. So when you're a member just of an extremist group, when you're a bigot, then yes, countries are entitled to say we don't actually want you coming here. Every country is entitled to control its own borders.
And also, Daniel Greenfield, the two congresswomen in question here, Ms. Omar and Ms. Tlaib, they tend to use the phrase the occupation, which even among critics of Israel, mostly now in the year 2019, is a phrase that for many of them they choose not to use. But I have to kind of laugh when I hear the occupation again. This takes me back like to the mid-70s.
Yeah, it's very much outdated. But again, they're not actually defining what part of Israel is occupied. So when they talk about the occupation, for example, Hamas and the PLO will insist that all of Israel is occupied territory. That is to say, all of Israel actually belongs to them. They don't actually draw that kind of line. A lot of BDS people don't draw that line. There's no sign that Tlaib or Omar wanted to draw the line, that they would recognize this part is Israel, this part is supposedly Palestine. As far as they're concerned, it's all occupied territory, which means that Israel has no right to exist and Jews have no right to exist in Israel.
You know, the American comedian Bill Maher, you may have seen this the other night, Daniel, who is hardly a conservative. He's a far, far liberal Democrat who is no, you know, fan of Republicans or the president. But Bill Maher did say something I thought that was funny and quite spot on the other night. You may have seen his quote. He said something to the effect of BDS is a leftist kind of purity test by people who have not or did not read history to understand what's going on there and what is going on.
Yeah, it's a very true comment, and that's precisely why Tlaib responded by calling for a boycott of his show. Now, these people insist that if you don't actually let them into a country, you're violating their speech rights, but of course they're entitled to call for boycotting other people. You're just not allowed to boycott them.
And Daniel, I was, you know, chatting the last couple of nights with some Jewish friends of mine, many of whom are on the other side of the political spectrum than I am, but they many of them are frustrated at the level of what they perceive as anti-Semitism. Currently now, liberal politicians in this country, and particularly in the Democratic Party, and one of them said, do they not see it? Can they be that naive, or are they just trying to close their eyes to it?
It's just, in many cases, not a priority for them. That's kind of the bottom line. There's a huge split between different American Jews as to the extent that they're committed to religion, to the extent that they're committed to any kind of meaningful Jewish identity. For a large number of American Jews, their Jewish identity basically consists of left-wing politics. They're told that this is the essence of what religion is, and that's the case for a certain number of liberal Protestants as well. It's very much a common problem where you kind of have this leftist religious identity, which is all about social justice, but does not actually have any God in it, doesn't have anything meaningful in it. But on the other hand, there is very much a different population of Jews who are not necessarily conservative, but are certainly religious and traditional, and that leads them to take certain conservative positions. So one of the statistics I like to quote, it comes from the Obama administration, was that among Jews who attended synagogue at least once a week, a majority disapproved of Obama. Among those who didn't, a majority did approve of Obama. So you do have this very definitive split, and it's among Jews, but it also parallels the splits you see among Christians and among Americans in general.
Yeah, and also, Daniel, I interviewed a Jewish political scientist once who said much of what you said. He parroted that, and he also said that for many modern American Jews, they have the memory of the U.S. South, which, of course, is now the home of the Republican Party, or its epicenter of the U.S. South, actually back in the days where it was controlled by racist Democrats and who killed those Jewish civil rights workers back several decades ago. And that really, the taste of that has never been erased from history, nor should it be. But the image of that is still reflective, they think, of conservative politics in this country.
I don't think that's the case. And, you know, those same people had very little concerns about the fact that the FDR administration chose to do nothing while millions of Jews were murdered during the Holocaust. The shift to the Democrats to the left began with the FDR era. Where many American Jews just chose to cast aside any kind of religious or traditional identity and went all in on the New Deal, where they went all in on socialism and on leftist politics, and very little has changed in some way since that. So you actually see when the Democrats take a position that's anti-Israel, for example, the Iran deal, where they basically allowed Iran to go ahead with its nuclear program, you will see a shift where a significant portion of Jewish Democrats will actually go along with that because that's their first allegiance.
Why do you think Daniel Greenfield, who was the guest joining us from Front Page Magazine and also the Shulman Journalism Center, why do you think, Daniel, that Bibi Netanyahu continues to survive, I believe now the longest tenured Israeli leader, and the media here in the U.S. and other parts of the world, they are so quick to ride Bibi's political epitaph, and he just continues winning?
Part of the situation is that within Israel, the left has collapsed. The left bet everything, it bet its political future on being able to make peace with the terrorists. And that has backfired very badly. The terrorists showed no signs in making peace and instead barraged Israel, even Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, with rockets. So the left has thoroughly discredited itself in Israel. And the other factor is that immigration in Israel has worked the opposite way the way that it does in the United States. Immigration in the United States, at least since the 50s and 60s, tended to bring in people who are more likely to vote Democrats. In Israel, the immigration process actually brought in people who are more likely to be conservative, completely reversing the political calculus.
Do you think, Daniel, final question here, do you think that a peaceful solution might move forward once this generation of leaders on the Palestinian side, for example, people like Abu Mazen are no longer with us? Will this whole thing eventually shake out, do you think, into a more peaceful situation?
Well, the problem isn't just the leadership, it's that they've actually been able to indoctrinate and create entire new generations that have been even more radicalized than they are. So when you have the PLO running things, when you have Hamas running things, the children who come out of that educational system are not going to be moderate. They're not going to be people who want peace. Instead, they've been told that their whole mission in life is to die in order to create this Palestinian state or Islamic state in the case of Hamas. So I don't see peace coming from that. You actually have to change the political system. You have to change who's in charge for there to be a meaningful difference.
And yet, it was not surprising to me, but other people are surprised when I show them that many non-Jews, Arabs, and Muslims who live in Israel, Daniel, you look at these surveys. They'd rather live there where they can live their life in relative peace. They can, if they're gay or lesbian, they don't have anything to worry about. They'd rather live there than in many of the other Arab states surrounding Israel.
Of course, life in most of those states is quite miserable. The per capita income in Israel is better. The civil rights situation is better. You actually are not going to be arrested and taken to a torture chamber if you disagree politically with the leadership. So it's much better. But at the same time, you do have organized activists who are pushing this radicalism. Now, if the entire population had a vote, the situation might be different. But that's never what happened. Instead, there was a process during which it was decided that the PLO would actually be able to gain control of the election in, I think, at this point, well over a decade. Meanwhile, the one time they did hold an election, Hamas was able to take over. So the political opposition there is not exactly very promising.
FrontPageMag.com is where you can read what American Jews don't understand about BDS. Daniel's own blog, SultanKanish.blogspot.com. Daniel, that warms my heart. I love a good Kanish. Trust me, my friend. I love that.
Next time we get together, we can share.
Absolutely, absolutely. We'll trade fillings. Daniel Greenfield. Daniel, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Well, there you go. There's his blog there. Sultan Kanish. SultanKanish. I always get tortured whether it's Sultan Nish or Sultan Kanish. SultanKanish.blogspot.com, the blog of Daniel Greenfield. And you can read him also at FrontPageMag.com. So, as you probably know, I have no use for esteemed congresswomen, and I say esteemed in quote, Ilhan Omar or Rashida Tlaib. There were 72 other congressmen and congresswomen who recently got to, visit Israel. They had no problems. They held meetings with people on both sides. But those two, or as I like to say, Thelma and Louise, they had to make a scene there.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Thank you for doing that on this National Radio Day. We do appreciate you listening here in Bridgeport, Southern Connecticut, New Haven, all along Fairfield County, all the way across the water too into the North Shore of Long Island. Legendary radio station right here at WICC 600. We thank you for listening to us once again. We're at WICC 600 on the air and WICC 600. Fourth and final hour, our next guest is a veteran odds maker, sports betting expert, and consultant who is keeping a close eye on the state-by-state sports betting legislation, of which we are still trying to get something going here in Connecticut. On behalf of CasinoInsider.com, James Murphy joins us. James, Paul here in Connecticut. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Paul. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. And James, you probably caught a little bit of my my last half hour, but you know, we're just banging our heads here on the wall here in Connecticut. You probably know because you follow this state by state. There's a big disagreement about what to do with the Indian tribes here, and that's trying to get worked out in the General Assembly. But you know, from afar, James, and from what you've noticed in states that have sports gambling already that are really ramping up here, what do you think the lay of the land here is in Connecticut as far as what we might be able to expect?
Again, it really kind of depends on how they set up the infrastructure. There are some states that have done a really nice job. Colorado is in the process of setting theirs up, and they've done a great job, and they'll be bringing in a lot of revenue. They've had several European companies that do some of the technology, underlying technology for sports betting, open up offices in the state. There's investment coming into the state and, you know, all these ancillary economic benefits. And so that's probably best case scenario. Worst case scenario, I was on the radio just about an hour ago with Oregon Public Broadcasting.
Okay.
And Oregon's going to do a very poor job. They're running it through the lottery. They're only going to offer pro sports, no college sports. And they're going to try to run it themselves. So it really kind of runs the gamut as far as what other states are doing. And really, that what Connecticut could expect is all contingent on how they set it up.
Interesting. Now, when you talk about the setup here, and casino expert and sports betting expert James Murphy is the guest, when you talk about a good job versus a poor job, James, can you get a little bit deeper into that? Now, the state you mentioned first that's doing the good job, is it a vendor? Is it a good vendor they're hiring, that foreign vendor? Is it how they're setting up the infrastructure? Is it the governing body, or is it a bit of everything?
It's a little bit of everything. I was also on the radio with Iowa earlier this week. They just launched sports betting, and they have done a great job at it. And they approached it, their gaming commission, they've got a pretty good casino industry already.
Mm-hmm.
Their gaming commission went into it saying, okay, we know we're not experts here, so we're going to talk to people in Nevada, we're going to talk to people in New Jersey, we're going to talk to the companies, and we're going to find out. We're going to see what they do right and basically try to emulate it here.
So the idea you're saying then, James Murphy, is to go into this saying, hey, or maybe Connecticut could say, listen, or the Indian tribes, whoever runs it here, saying, listen, let's get the best. It might cost us a little more, but let's do this right. Let's not screw the pooch here from the get-go.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I would say, every state that has done it well, and again, I've kind of looked into the nuance. We'll say that my perspective is from the perspective of the player.
Yeah.
You know, if as a bettor, would I want to bet in the state?
Okay.
And to do that, you pretty much have to get the private sector involved. For one thing, they know what they're doing. They're the experts at it, and for you know, and it's like any other business.
Sure.
Works the best with a competitive marketplace.
So, for example, we hear in neighboring states how some of them are doing it themselves, or, you know, I know William Hill is one of the biggest and oldest companies, so you're saying, you know, go with the biggies here. And you're saying from a perspective, from a better perspective. So let's talk about somebody,
sure.
James, who's playing. What is the, you know, we've evolved, like I said last half hour, from, you know, getting our football slips in the firehouse, you know. You and I can probably remember that. But what does the modern-day sports betting customer, James, what do they want?
What do they want? For one thing, they want ease of use. They want mobile, for one thing. I know New Jersey, 70 to 80% of their revenue from sports betting is mobile betting. They want a variety. There's a lot of, you know, back 20, 30 years ago, the only sports people bet on in the U.S. were basically basketball and football.
Yeah.
But now there's a popular, you know, there's a lot of soccer. There's a lot of the other European sports like rugby. So, you know, they want variety. They want they want a little competitive marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want competing lines to choose the best line to bet a place to bet from. And they want sensible regulation. They don't want their options limited by regulations that are there just to appease politicians and just don't make sense. And that's another thing Iowa did really well is said, okay, we're going to have a light touch with regulation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got these kind of big picture goals for what it'll do, but we know we're not the experts at this. We know that the companies like FanDuel and PointsBet, which is an Australian company coming in to run their books, they know what they're doing. You know, they've been doing this for a while and all over the world. So we're going to let them kind of lead the way on this as long as they're doing, you know, meeting our kind of high-level criteria.
And I think, James, you bring up a good point. You know, I say when we discuss this on shows like this and other shows I've done, we're really bringing up the rear on this. I mean, there's been sports betting in Europe and South America and other areas for decades, right?
Yeah, and that's something a lot of states are kind of myopic about is they go into this thinking that they've got the business sewn up in their state. They're the only game in town. But no matter what state they're in, they're going into a competitive business. You know, as I often say, as I said earlier today, anyone who's wanted to place a bet for the past 15 to 20 years has been able to do so with ease, mm-hmm. no matter where they live in the United States. And a lot of times what you'll hear the state governments do is kind of denigrate the offshore betting industry as rogue operators or the black market. What they are is very, you know, they're professional bookmakers, and they know what they're doing, and they offer a good product, and they're done a good job keeping their customers happy.
Yeah, you know, and James, I've watched professional bookmakers and gamblers work. These guys aren't working, and these gals are in some smoke-filled room somewhere.
Right.
I worked for a short time in Las Vegas. We, of course, here in New Haven have the one of the the OTB with the theater facilities, and the people that do this and take this seriously, it's really not an emotional thing for some people. They are hardcore numbers people. They're trying to make money here.
Yeah, it's you know, from the player's perspective, that's you know, you're right on the money, no pun intended. You know, when I lived in Las Vegas for about the past decade,
mm-hmm.
and people would always say, "Oh, you must be in the golf course every day, you know, partying." I spent most of my day staring at a spreadsheet.
That's right.
And you know, it wasn't a particularly exciting. You know, it was basically me and my dog. You know, my idea of excitement was walking my dog on the strip.
Wow.
It was 5 a.m. The people, and it's very technology intensive now. It's not smoke-filled rooms. It's not, you know, it's not going to be bookmaking parlors on every corner. It's online, and the technology involved is something that it boggles my mind. And I've been following, you know, I've been doing this for over 25 years. I'll look at some of the European sports books and what they offer and the technology platforms they use, and it's just mind-boggling. It looks like something the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange.
Sure, sure, sure. Is Connecticut going to do eventually sports gambling, and will they do it right? Our guest has some insights here. On behalf of CasinoInsider.com, James Murphy, a 25-year-plus veteran odds maker, sports betting expert, and consultant. James, how do you gauge the prospective dollar figures of what a sports gambling or sports betting market is worth? Is that just a guess, or are there any indicators that are usually accurate or not?
It's kind of tough to do. Again, you know, it's obviously population's a function,
mm-hmm.
Tax rate's a function, how competitive they are relative to your offshore books, you know, basically what other options people have is a function. But really it's just guesswork. And I can kind of tell now, I've kind of done this enough with all the states that are implementing it or considering it.
Yeah.
I can kind of get a pretty good guess on, you know, at least where they'll be in terms of their projections, whether their projections are realistic or
mm-hmm.
just pie in the sky, based on how they set it up. And that's really the crucial element.
So do you anticipate, let's assume something that doesn't happen often here, James. Let's assume Connecticut does it right. Now, that doesn't happen often here. But as far as the yearly gross, I mean, do you have any ideas? Are we talking 30, 40, 50, 100 million a year? Could it be more? Could it be less? Does it take time to ramp up? What do you think about this market?
Again, I think if they put up a competitive product, I don't think it'll take any time at all to ramp up. I think they'll have a very good client base from the get-go. What New Jersey did last month, I was just looking at New Jersey's handle last month, they took in $280 million, excuse me, that's, I can't read my writing, $250 million of bets.
Wow.
They held $18 million, and the state got $2 million in tax revenue.
Okay.
You make a good point that is giving the state more revenue to work with a good thing, but for, you know, for the sake of argument, we'll assume that it is. It's you know, obviously Connecticut, I believe, is like slightly less than half the population of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
but you know, that kind of gives you a guideline of what's possible.
Sure.
And New Jersey's only going to get bigger. They think you know, within the year, it'll be a bigger market than Nevada, and you know, and again, the thing that I think a lot of states are missing the boat on, that I was really praised Colorado for, is the potential for ancillary economic benefits, bringing jobs to your state, which is, you know, what politicians always want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it's a, you know, they think it's going to be like a 40s noir movie, you know, with all these gangsters running around. But, you know, the jobs you're bringing in are high-tech jobs. These are the jobs that purportedly people want. You know, they're software engineer jobs. They're data, you know, data management jobs.
Yeah.
All these very high-tech jobs that are in demand, high-paying, and basically the kind of thing you want in the state. And then there's other things like, you know, there's marketing. There's all, so many ancillary industries that will need to be there to support sports betting if they do it right.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's the key component there. But I think a lot of states are missing that, you know, what could become of that. And, you know, and I understand a lot of times the decision to open casinos, they try to frame it as a quality of life decision. We don't want casinos everywhere. But this is this is an industry where you won't have it. It's going to be predominantly online. It'd be like having Google in your state. It's maybe not that big as far as one company, but you know, it's going to be a high-tech industry, and it's really not going to have a downside effect on your quality of life. It's going to be online.
Are most of these states that you analyze, James Murphy, do they prohibit gambling on the in-state colleges and universities that are in those particular states?
They've kind of started to. There's quite a few that do, and it's kind of unfortunate because that was something Nevada stopped doing 15 years ago. For a long time, they didn't have wagering on UNLV or Nevada Reno.
Yeah, yeah.
But they changed that, and nothing happened. You know, all the people at the various sports programs said, well, it's no different for us. And
well, the fear, James, was always, right, that you know, that somebody would get to the athletes, right, would say, listen, we're not telling you to lose the game, just brick a few shots and keep it within the spread. Yeah.
That's obviously the fear, but there hasn't been a lot of empirical evidence to bear that out. And, you know, there's been a few incidents, and there always are in Europe, you know, soccer. And right now the most crooked sport in the world is low-level men's tennis.
Yes.
A lot of people are surprised by.
Thank you. No, you know what, James, I was wondering when you started to say this, I'm trying to remember, and I said tennis, and you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
There are more low-level tennis matches fixed than anything else.
You are correct. And the other thing is, if you're really worried about that, the first line of defense is the bookmaker. The bookmaker doesn't want to be taking action on a fixed game. It's bad business. And anytime you hear about a point-fixing scandal or in the U.S. or in Europe, I would say 9 times out of 10, it was a bookmaker or a sports book in Las Vegas or wherever. They're the ones that notice the impropriety and the money coming in.
Yeah, well, that's it. Now, that's it. Exactly. You know, the people who know, right, James? When the money changes at the last minute, that's when the red flag goes up.
Yeah, and again, if especially on something like low-level European tennis, you know, if they get a lot of money on an NFL game, they really don't worry about it. But if, you know, they kind of know what they get on, like, preliminary tennis tournament matches, if all of a sudden they get, like, 10 times that much all on one side, you know, they don't just fall off the proverbial turnip truck. You know, they kind of know what they're looking for, what's going on.
That's one of my favorite phrases. You just used it. Yeah.
Yeah, my family's from South Carolina.
Well, there you go. There you go. James Murphy, a 25-year-plus veteran odds maker, sports betting expert. He's watching. He's telling his folks, do it the right way. You can read his stuff at CasinoInsider.com. Now, James, I'm not going to let you go without asking you this. The host you're talking to right now and his producer, my producer Aaron, on the other side of the glass who you spoke with, the cross we've carried in our lives, Aaron's only half as long, half as old as I am, but we are voracious New York Jets fans, okay? All right, in 30 seconds, how many games are the Jets winning this year?
They've got a lot of talent. There's a lot of people who don't like your head coaching hire and think that might do you in. I'm going to say 6.
What? You're going 6-10?
Yeah, I don't think I think the coach is going to run into the ground, and they brought him in to work with Darnold, supposedly as he's an offensive genius. His teams in Miami were always 25th or lower in total offense. He got his rep in Denver for making quarterbacks. The quarterback he quote unquote made was a guy named Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Who I think kind of had his
I think probably he knew what was going on.
Yeah, I could have been the office.
I could have too. Give me the clipboard and the headset, and I'm good. James Murphy, thank you. We will talk in the future if this thing moves to fruition. We'll definitely have you back on. Thanks, James.
Okay, I enjoyed it. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Bye bye. 6-10, bro. He's killing us. 6-10.
Yeah, that one hurt.
Oh, that hurt.
That hurt a little bit.
Traffic and weather together. I expect him to say 8-8, 9-7, maybe a wild card. Oh, traffic and weather together on the 6s. Ugh. Oh.